fill the jobs that we do have, regardless of industry, regardless of seasonality, regardless of anything, right? In July, Dane County had an unemployment rate of 4.2%. First time it's been below the national average since I can remember in a long time. Our recent employer survey just showed us that out of the 174 employers that responded, we're showing over 2,000 job openings within the county that are going unfilled. Right, and I know there's more than 174 employers in Tane County. That's just from the respondents, so we have to believe there's more than that. Our biggest challenge is workforce housing. If you want to call it low-income housing, if you want to call it workforce, starter homes, you name it. That is our next big hurdle to get over, to get a labor base large enough to fill the existing jobs that are currently going unfilled. 2 years ago, we did a tabletop analysis of areas within the county that could support a 21st century industrial park. One is south, down where the old racetrack property was, or the Russell Cook property has been referred to. The second place was this area here, in conjunction with an infrastructure improvement project, not unlike the East-West Corridor Road, because you look at development costs, you look at topography, the area in that stretch, there's some flatter ground. If you're obviously familiar with Tane County, we don't have a great abundance of. So on the attraction piece, where we fall short in attracting new industrial employers, year-round job growth, you go down the box, access to rail, existing shovel-ready sites, workforce, all right? Those are the three where we fall extremely short in a competitive basis when you have prospects that come through the state. So all that said, I'm not saying if we build a 200-acre industrial park, we'll start knocking off a bunch of 50-man and 75-man shops or person shops. I'm not going to tell you that, but where we sit today, we don't compete, and those are the reasons. And it comes back to infrastructure. And so for us to have an opportunity to set ourselves up for future success, be it 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, I think I look at the opportunity cost. What opportunities are we missing for one of the options of doing nothing? That's the way I see it, because we have things we can do, things we should do, and I think this is one of them. So from a strictly economic development standpoint, I don't foresee any project other than maybe the expansion or the extension of 86 over to the development that's going on over there as important or as having a broad benefit to the county than this one. So I'm not going to talk about safety, schools, all that other stuff. There's data that can support all that, but I know from an economic development standpoint, which I work with every day, this would be a huge, huge big deal for the county. And like I said, we advocate for setting ourselves up for future success, and this allows us to do that.
Whenever you say that, so are you saying there's not enough people here to fill the jobs?
Absolutely.
And I understand your data and your numbers and your surveys and all that would say that. I think there's a lot of people out there that aren't looking for jobs.
Then we get the socioeconomic stuff, which
I understand that, but how are we going to keep that from being a socioeconomic issue as well? How are we going to keep those things from happening? Maybe it's great for 5 years, 10 years, but how do we keep it from happening 15, 20? I've been here all my life. You've been here 1 year. I'm never going to leave. I'm never going to leave.
I've got. Leave either, but how does this project cause socioeconomic issues?
I don't know. But that, so if we don't, okay, so we build a bunch of houses. Are they going to be affordable? We don't know because we don't own the property to develop it. Who's going to develop it? What are they going to charge? Are there going to be houses that's going to last longer than 5 years? Are there going to be houses that last 50 years? Again, you're bringing up a lot of issues, and I understand you guys are realtors, and you know the problems and everybody that we deal with. How do we make sure that we do what's best for the entire county and not just a 5-year fix or a 10-year fix? I'm not saying you're not right. I'm just asking how do we prevent that? How do we make sure that my kids, my grandkids, and my great-grandkids can stay here and still have everything that's needed? And it not turn into
a table with about five, six different developers locally and regionally. And their barrier to access to this market is development cost.
Right.
And so if we don't address that, we're not going to get any good housing development, right? And with and what they're telling us also is that it's actually cost prohibitive to even go and rehab the existing inventory that we do have.
So it's cost prohibitive by... So, and again, we don't need to have a debate in front of everybody, but we're going to spend $25 to $30 million to make it less cost prohibitive for them?
Yeah, I would say that was a, that would be a great investment.
And I still don't know that the people that, that do come in, are they going to be able to, I guess from firsthand experience, and you've had businesses before, the county, we're trying to hire people now. Nobody wants to work. We're not getting applications. We're providing great benefits. We're providing good wages. We're providing certain things. I had an individual in my own personal business that said, hey, I will never lay you off. You'll get 40 hours a week or more, and you don't have to work weekends, year round. No, I only want to work about 30 hours a week. I want to be laid off, and I don't care if I come in at 10, leave at 6 or 7 anyways. And he's got a baby, a new baby. And so those are the people we're dealing with as well. We've got other people that are really working and really trying, and they want to better themselves. But you can't say that these others don't exist. And that's my concern is how do we make sure that those things don't happen? And we can't guarantee anything. I understand that.
Yeah. And I just know people do things they don't want to do.
I understand that.
If I could wave my magic wand over the 4.2% that are actually being counted, we'd still be over 500 people short, according to the survey.
Right.
So unless we expand the labor pool or the labor shed by either attracting new residents that are wanting and willing to work or improving the infrastructure so those commute times and or other reasons get diminished to get more, so expand the labor shed outside the 19 counties. I mean, we can debate all day long of how and why people don't want to work, but the numbers are the numbers. The employers are telling us they can't get people, right?
I know we can't.
And you're one of them. So I think the best thing as a public entity we can do is invest in infrastructure to allow the private sector more opportunity and to be more successful.
But I think we need to be careful in doing that and not giving too much.
Jonas, can I ask the 4.2% unemployment? Because I have always wondered, you know, why we would have any unemployment if the jobs are there. We need workers. Are we saying there are people that are not capable of working? Do they?
The 4.2% that are counted are those that are actively seeking employment and not finding it. That doesn't include the disengaged members of the community that have just totally given up. And, quite frankly, have done the math that it costs me more to go get a job than it does to get my benefits from not having a job.
It's just hard for me to understand how, if they're actively seeking and not finding it, but we're saying we have all these jobs and nobody to fill them.
But when you collect unemployment...
It used to be a pride issue. Pride issue and whatever else...
The type of job...
And that could be wrong, so I'm not, because this isn't my specialty, but whenever you're on unemployment, you have to go and apply at jobs, so many jobs per week or per month or whatever.
You're supposed to,
but whenever they, because again, they come in and they apply, but they really don't want a job, and they tell you that. They say, hey, I really don't want hired, but I'm going to put you down as me applying here, so that way if you do get a phone call, because I'm going to put you down in my report that I send to the state, but if you do get a phone call, just tell me I came by. I'll hire you right now.
That gets off to a whole different sidebar about entitlements
But that's why I say that 4.2%.
But
that's why I say be careful with that 4.2%, because it's probably quite a bit.
Not my number.
I know that.
I can't be careful. I get the number.
I understand. My very first statement was, as I understand, you get the reports, the surveys, and all those things, but I don't know that I put a lot of faith in the accuracy of those numbers. That was my very first statement. So, anyways, but you're using those numbers to us, so you're taking value in those.
Your
numbers.
Labor statistics, unemployment numbers through BLS and through Merrick.
I understand.
Are widely accepted nationwide. So.
I understand that, but.
So, if you were going to go forward with the grant, you need an environmental, you need an engineer study.
Let's see. What's it going to cost to move forward?
This is.
It depends on what level you want to take it to. The further along, the better.
We want to take it, if we were to choose to take it to a level, we would take it to the level that would have the best chance that we get the Tiger Grant.
And that would be final design.
Okay.
So, and typically final design costs are about 10% of the overall construction.
So you're looking around possibly $3 million.
$2.5 to $3 million.
To possibly get something that we don't know if 100% we're going to get or not?
It's every community fights that issue day in and day out. So it's the ones that are prepared and take the gamble that end up ultimately getting the federal funding, which can pay 50 to 75% of the project, especially in rural areas. This particular program that's out right now, there's going to be a high priority placed on rural communities, not urban areas. Typically, you see these programs going to like Kansas City, St. Louis, not this one. It's a $500 million program. $100 million of it has to go to rural communities, so less than 50,000. So we have good reason to believe it's going to continue, and there will be either another round of Tiger Grants, or there will be the new infrastructure plan whenever the details of that emerge about the availability of federal funds. And even to compete for statewide, for the STIP, it needs to be further along. Like what Rick had said earlier, you know, we don't have any right of way except the school district potentially. The environmental clearance, that needs to get done because you have some major creek crossings that have to be coordinated through the Corps of Engineers. So that takes time. And the more you get done now, the easier we're going to have a chance to get federal funding for the project.
Just a side note, a road and bridge is right now getting ready to try to proceed with putting the bridge over Coon Creek, so to handle, you know, the flooding there.
That's sure. Not that. And that would definitely help with the flooding issue because currently it's a low water crossing, and so every flooding event that's out of service essentially. So yes, that is very much appreciated.
The other thing you said that surprised me is when you said you did not recommend applying for it now, because I thought, you know, that's what it's going to be. And
yeah.
And we do meet all the requirements that it says. And like you said, the rural area they're really focusing on for this grant. We meet all the requirements for safety conditions and so forth. But like you say, we're the number one. We're not shovel ready.
Yeah, and the application process, the reason why I don't recommend doing that now, because you'd be literally throwing $50,000 to $70,000 at a program that you're not going to get any money out of it, at least when you read all the criteria for the funding mechanism. So it'd be throwing money away.
So we'd be irresponsible.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, I'd love to be able to get a contract for $50,000 to help you with that, but that's not the right thing to do. The timing is not right. It's not set up for the program. The project's not far enough along. So I would say you use whatever revenue you do have available, if you have any available, and put that push the needle down the road. Let's get this ready because it is a critical project. You know, there will be some naysayers. That always happens.
And you always have to be able to argue with the naysayers.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's good to have a devil's advocate.
Yeah. Well, part of that too,
to help you know what they're going to say.
Yeah. Brandon Williams.
Well, and part of that too.
Let me help you. Okay. The downtown bridges. We decided that we're just going to go out and get ready to go on the downtown bridges. So we did all of the stuff we're asking to have done here. And guess what? The downtown bridges cost us this much. Hollister had thrown in all of its surface transportation money. Branson had thrown in all of its. The county committed. We're going to build the bridge. But we had the plans and we were ready to go. And then all of a sudden, MoDOT comes along and says, we've got $25 million of Recovery Act money that is not fitting any projects. What have you got that we can start building in 30 days? We said, bam, this. They said, done. In 2006, the East-West Corridor Road was worth $19 million. Guess what else was worth $19 million? The Hollister Interchange. We built the Hollister Interchange, and to Brandon's point about, well, just because you build it, we will come, may or may not. Well, Brandon came to the Hollister Interchange for his business because it was there. It's a great place. okay, that's some things. Now, the other thing is that these guys are not going to say,